Hey guys, my name's Abe. I'm a recovered crack cocaine addict alcoholic. Been sober since October 20th of 2004. That's a miracle, man. I got intervened on. I was in here with people who like wanted to be here, like people who waited in lines to be here. And people who really wanted this thing and needed this thing so bad. And that wasn't my story. You know, and if you didn't choose to be here and you don't think this thing isn't going to work for you, that's not the deal. Grace falls on all of us equally. And that's the beauty of grace. It's unearned or undeserved favor. That's why we're sober today. We're sober by grace. We get happy by doing the work. We get happy by sticking around and getting esteem. That's where the happiness comes in, but we're sober by grace. Don't get it twisted. I didn't work harder for my grace than you did. You know, I was sitting in here with people that my best friend in Austin Recovery was a Baptist minister, and man, I loved to hear him talking about his relationship with God. And this guy had an amazing Jesus, and man, I wanted what this guy had. You know, and there's another guy who was a Buddhist, and this guy, Native American spirit and energy, and I wanted what this guy had. But we're all sitting in the same treatment center together with the same disease. So I don't need someone else's concept of God. I need experience with power. I went to this concert the other night, and the first song we walked in on is called "God Is in the House," and I was walking in, and they're playing this like majestic. I don't know if you felt it. I felt it. It was just power all over the place, and it's just like God is in the house, and it's just like Austin. Atheist, hippie, punk rock, talking about God being in the house. And I just felt this energy and this power. It's just like, man, this thing's real. You don't have to believe it or feel it yet. The way God was explained to me is, I'm from Austin. God is Dallas. I don't have to believe in Dallas. I don't have to know my way around Dallas. I have to be willing to walk north on I-35 and Dallas will make itself apparent. So am I willing to walk north? I got intervened on. I said, this has happened before. So many people want to love me, you know, especially in my disease. And everyone wants to help the little broken spirit. You know, that's our thing. You know, everyone wants to help. And I don't know if you guys have ever heard this, but I've heard it my whole life. He's got such potential. Oh, she has such potential. So bright. If he would just apply himself. You guys ever heard that about yourselves? Infinite potential. Big heart. So it wasn't that bad. The way I tell the story, it wasn't that bad this time around when I got intervened on. I just bought a house, brand new truck in the driveway. And it had been bad. Alcohol and cocaine have driven me homeless several times. I was still in my 20s, so it was called backpacking. It's not homeless till you're 30, and then it's homeless. But, yeah, you go from being a free spirit to a hobo real quick, like in that 1 year. So, you know, the yard was mowed. New truck in the driveway, brand new Tacoma, house, yard mowed. But inside it was a wreck. There's an Adirondack chair, bongs everywhere, ashtrays spilled, scales. It was a shell, just like me. Externally it was fine, but internally I was a mess. And, you know, I used to work with this guy. He was a real religious guy, and I mean, we still partied together, but he had God, you know. And I came in one time, and he was like, "Oh my God, dude, you need Jesus." I was like, "Yeah, I need something, man." But I knew he was kind of right. You know, I didn't know about the Jesus, or Jesus kind of freaks me out, but it's, I'm not against him. I don't know, you know. But this guy, he was right. I needed something. I went into work after, you know, bad run. Those last days were rough. They were rough. I remember, well, my friends told me the story about what my last couple of days. And, you know, I'd been locked up in my house for, I don't even know how long, you know, stuck, you know, smoking cocaine and just stuck. And a handle of Bushmills, stuck, you know. And some of my friends, there was a Bad Religion show that night, and some of my friends came in and they're like, "We got you a ticket. You're coming out. We're going to have fun like the old days. We're just going to drink beer and smoke weed and get off that heavy shit, and let's just have some fun." And I wanted to go back to those days that they're talking about, you know, when it was fun. And but I couldn't get there. You know, I drank as much as I could to try and take that edge off, but that edge wouldn't come off. And I overshot the mark, like I always overshoot the mark. That's what I do. I overshoot the mark. And it was a train wreck. You know, I got kicked out of several bars that friends of mine were running, you know. And they're like, "Dude," they used to call me Eskimo. And they're like, "Eskimo, you got to go, bro." It was bad. I tried to go into work on Monday, and I fell asleep in a production meeting, and you know, and I thought I was above the rules and above, you know, reproach, you know, because I'm entitled. I don't know if you guys have entitlement issues. Anyone? Entitlement? Yeah. I've got entitlement issues, and I was top sales guy. My numbers speak for themselves, you know, and I've always put myself here. Like, I'm going to put my production high enough to where you can't say anything to me. I'm going to pay the bills so you can't say anything to me. I'm going to be the boss so you can't say anything to me. I'm going to put myself in a position where you can't say anything to me. And I don't take loved ones. I take hostages. You know? You can't even get mad at me. And it's horrible, and it's horrible to try and love someone like that. And my broker called me in his office, and he said, I can't do this anymore. I can't watch you kill yourself. It's like, it's not even that bad, dude, you know? And he was like, "We thought you were dead in the meeting." And apparently I, like, fell out, you know. I thought I would just nod it off for a second. They thought it was a stroke. I don't know. The way I tell it, it's not that bad. It's that bad. You know, and I remember waking up, and I just bought the house. I was in the middle room, empty. Bottle of Bushmills, half gallon, like halfway drinking. House was a wreck. Everything was trashed. Like, front door was wide open. Truck was parked sideways in the yard. Like, it was bad. I didn't even drive that night. I don't know how the truck got. I don't know what happened. It was that kind of night. And you know, I remember saying, I don't want to do this anymore. you know, I woke up and saw that bottle, and I don't want to do this anymore. But then I reached in my pocket, and I had a big pound of cocaine in there, and I was like, okay, maybe I'll do it a little more. So, you know, I had a lot of moments of clarity, but I didn't listen to all those moments of clarity. You know, so I said to my broker, you know, and people have ultimatum to me so many times, you know, I can't even, you know, if you do this again, you can't work with us anymore. If you don't show up again, you're fired. If you don't come home one more time, I can't let you live with me anymore. If you do this, I'm leaving you. I've been ultimatumed 1,000 times, and I've always chosen the other. Well, if you can't live with me, then you don't love me. Good luck. You know, well, then I don't need this job, you know. And this time I decided to take the help. I said, fine. And I did it like I always do it, on my terms. Fine, you need to take that? Go ahead. I'm sure it's important. Okay. I've got severe ADD. No moving around or taking phone calls, please. Or I'm just looking down. What was I talking about? I really don't remember. Ultimatums, thank you. Anyone else need a cup of coffee or use a restroom or anything? Good. Now's the time. Now? I got ultimatumed, and I said, I did it like I always do, on my terms. I'll go to detox, but I'm not going to rehab. I hit my first rehab at 13. It doesn't work. And I went to detox, and it was fine. And I was watching all the little junkies leave out the side door, I'm like, you know, good luck, guys, you know, and all the little junkies leave all the time, I get it, man. I've been hooked on junk. You know, it sucks. You know, I've kicked opiates. It sucks. You know, I get it. It was my last day of detox, and I knew if they let me out, I was going to get high again. And everybody in detox was like, "Oh, we're going to the ranch. We're going to the ranch." And I'm like, "Man, that sounds cool." Yeah. I saw the brochure, and it's like swimming pool and like horses, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to the ranch. And they're like, yeah, that'll be $17,500. And I'm like, oh, I'm not going to the ranch. And they said, we have a county bed coming open, county funded. If this guy doesn't show up by 3 o'clock, you can have that spot. And I tell the story about how I'm not religious and I don't have a God and all this stuff, but the minute the lights are flashing behind me, I've got 2 pounds under the seat and a pistol. I'm like, oh God, please, please, Lord, let me get out of this. I'll never cuss again. You know, I'm religious real quick. You know, and this is what happened. I said a prayer. I say I'm atheist, I say I'm agnostic, and I said a prayer. And I said, God, let this guy do dope for one more day. Just like the most selfish prayer you can ever say. And he did. And I was cool. I got into the ranch, and I was like, great, thank you so much. I'm so grateful. Let me run to the house. I got to go by the office. Let me send some emails. Let me handle some stuff, and I'll meet you guys at the ranch. They're like, no. They're like, get in the druggy buggy. We're going to treatment. And I was like, but I got to go by the, I got to do this, I got to do this. And they said, what are you going to do in 30 minutes that you haven't done in 10 years? I said, okay, fair enough. And I came to treatment. Awesome recovery. And it did not look like the brochure. It was a warehouse of drug addicts. And I'm like, oh, dormitory style situation. I was like, oh, shit, they got me. I'm a sales guy, so I appreciate that. I'm like, well done, well played. No horses, I get it. I was here in treatment for 30 days, and it was a dormitory-style situation. Men only, women were back at the city because they used to be separate. And I know how to do a dormitory-style situation. I'll hang out with the Mexicans, play dominoes, let me out in 30 days, you know, push-ups, you know. And I did. I went in and got in chat line with the Mexican dudes. I'm like, hey, what's up, dude? You know, what's I was trying to figure out, like, what the currency is. Like, what do they need? They need coffee. They need cigarettes. Like, how do I not do chores? Like, you know, how do I make this as easy as possible? And they're like, yeah, hey, man, it's not like that. We're just trying to get better. So there was no hustle. I don't know about you guys, but I'm always looking for the hustle, the angle, I do a quick read of any situation. I see what people might need, what might want, what they might need or want in the future, and I address those needs quick, and I put myself in a position to where they might need me or want me soon. And there was no hustle in recovery. And I went and talked with my counselor. You know, went and had my first meeting with my counselor, and it was a somber-lit office. Light smell of lavender, southern lady, southern draw, sweet, sweet old lady. And so I just started telling her everything. I was just like, my dad didn't love me like he loved my brother. They never went to my games. They didn't support me. Just everything. You know, I shot a kid when I was 15. I've affected the way people live their lives. Just everything. Every unloving thing that I've done that was done to me. Everything. I unloaded everything. And she's doing a county-funded intake. She's like, what was your social? So I'd only seen this in movies. I was like, you lay there and you tell them all your shit and you get better. And she was like, how's that feel? I was like, I don't know, good? She's like, good's not a feeling. She's like, you seem sad. I'm like, what? I'm Mexican. We don't get sad. Like, my dad's a colonel. We don't get sad. Like, we're hungry or tired. Like, that's our feelings. And she made me wear this stupid thing. It was like, ask me how I feel. And it had pictures of emotions on the back of it. Like, happy, perplexed, confused, scared. So the way I tell the story, I came in not afraid of anything. I grew up an alpha Hispanic family, military, dad's a boxing instructor. I'm not afraid of anything. I walk into a situation people are running from. I'm not afraid of anything, and that's not the truth. I'm afraid of everything. My whole life's been based on fear. All those things that I'm running towards is because I'm scared. And that's how I react to them. All those dangerous situations that I put myself in because I'm scared. You're running this way, I'm running that way. It's all fear. I, you know, that lady was so kind. her name was Gail. She was my first counselor, and she was amazing. You know, they taught me about the steps in here. You know, guys came in here carrying the message. And I don't, you know, nothing against the program at Austin Recovery or any of their counselors, but I don't remember the cognitive lessons that were taught to me. I don't remember the counseling sessions that were taught to me. I remember the 12-step principles that were taught to me. I remember the H&I groups that came and talked to me. I remember the guys from AA, the guys from CA that came out carrying a message. And guys came out with 20 years and big watches and big trucks. I didn't hear a word they said. This guy came out from Cocaine Anonymous. He had 6 months of sobriety, lived in a sober house, worked in a kitchen for $8 an hour. Fat Mexican dude, busted up grill. I wanted what that guy had. That guy had freedom. That guy did dope the way I did dope, and I believe he didn't ever have to do it again. And I said, I'm going to try this thing one time, and if it works, cool. And if not, could I already know how to live that other life? Something happened in the mechanics of this work. Something happened in the mechanics of the book. I was almost going to do it to show that it doesn't work on me. You know, I was going to do it exactly the way they did it. And guys came out here carrying a message that had double-digit sobriety and lost it. I was like, why did you lose your sobriety? And they're like, well, I stopped going to meetings. I stopped praying and meditating. I stopped helping people. You know, I'm thinking to myself, that's so selfish. You know, that's all you have to do to stop wrecking trucks and missing Christmas is do those things. And you're not willing to do those things? But the ego rebuilds so quick. My ego rebuilds so quick. You know, I used to work in psych, and I'd see the guys come in off their meds. And they'd hang out with us a while and get meds stabilized. And I'd wish them well. I'd say, dude, you look amazing. Good luck. And they'd come back in 6 months. They'd come back in 9 months. They'd come back in 3 months. It's like, dude, what happened? It's like, I stopped taking my meds. It's like, why did you do that? Because I felt better. Why did you stop going to meetings? Why did you stop calling people? Why did you stop helping people? Because I felt better. I have this, you know, I say I came in without a God, but I found something cooler. And I'll call it God now because I'm not articulate enough to call it anything else. But to me, here's my concept of God. My concept of God is the way I love that puppy. That fat little milk-breathed puppy that I don't know. I don't know where it comes from. I don't know who owns it. It's going home with someone else, but I love this thing. I want it. Even if just for a minute, I want to hold it and love it. And I want to kiss it and hold it. Now, that feeling is God. This thing's going home with someone else. I don't have an attachment to it. I just want to love it in that moment. And that's perfect love. And that's what I want. And that feeling that I can't explain, that's love, that's God, that's the coolest. I took my dog to a meeting. I had this dog 5 years back or however long ago, 87-pound pit bull. And this dog was love incarnate, just love. His name was Yoshi. And I took him to a meeting with me, and he went up to the stinkiest crackhead, had 30 seconds of sobriety. You could smell his feet when he walked in. And my dog went up to that guy and was like, hey. Hey, man, I love you. Scratch my butt. That's love. That's my God concept. That's what I want. I want to be that dog that goes up to the stinkiest crackhead and says, I love you, man. Hey, stick around. Where's the coffee's right over here. You want a cup? That's who I want to be. That's my spiritual mentor. God, that's the feeling. That's the feeling. God, to me, is like Santa Claus. He doesn't come and bring presents. It's that one, there's that feeling that makes me want to give all the presents. It's that feeling that makes me want to make you feel happy. That's God. That's the coolness, man. That's the cool part. If you haven't experienced that, you're selling yourself short. My sponsor used to say, you've been invited to eat at the king's table. You've been invited to the feast, and you're settling for crumbs. Not wanting to go to meetings, not wanting to help people, not wanting to meditate. You're settling for crumbs. You've been invited to the feast for free. That's where we are today. I remember sitting in treatment. I was like, this is my shot. This is my shot to become the man I've always wanted to become. This is my shot to be the one, be the man who does what he says he's going to do to the best of his ability. It's my girlfriend. I try and do the best I can do. This is my shot to become the person I've always wanted to become. And I'm not going to squander this. I'm not throwing this opportunity away. So I'm going to work this thing mechanically. I'm going to work this thing the way the guys that had the happiness work this thing. And if it works, great. You know, and someone told me real early in my sobriety, you know, this thing's so simple. A grateful heart never drinks, and a grateful heart never uses. You know, we can go around right now and talk about what we're grateful for. Oh, I'm grateful for my family. I'm grateful for my health. I'm grateful for my sobriety. What does that look like? I'm grateful for my sobriety. I prayed and meditated this morning. I'm grateful for my health. I went on a bike ride today and walked around the lake. I'm grateful for my recovery. I went and carried a message to a meeting before I came to this meeting. Gratitude. It's an action. It's not a feeling. Oh, I'm grateful for my truck. Yeah, go look at the inside of it. You'll see how grateful I am for my truck. That's something I say. That's not what's really going on. I'm entitled to that truck. Entitlement's the opposite of gratitude. You know, that call home from treatment, what does that look like? Hey, I need you to take care of my truck. I need you to take care of this. I need you to take care of that. Hey, I'm not going to sober living. I need a house. Like, I want my apartment back. You know, I want to come home. Just give me another chance, you know. Is that how the call went? Or did it say, hey, I just want to let you know I'm okay. How's Dad? We'll see you later. I want to let you know I'm getting better. That's a gratitude call. There's no entitlement in that. It's gratitude. I did my third step and gave my life to the power of God as I didn't understand him. I have no understanding. I still have little understanding of this power. I have experience with it. I don't have understanding of it. I have experience with power. I did my third step with my sponsor outside of at an AA club. They have a big room and a small room, and I was in the small room. And this window, like, two-way painted window, I don't know what they call them, where, like, you can see out, but they can't see in. And we got down on our knees. We held hands, and we said the prayer, the third step. God, I offer myself to you to build with me and do with me as you will. Relieve me from the bondage of self, that I might better do your will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them will bear witness to those I would help, your power, your love, and your way of life. And I'm giving my life to this thing I don't even understand. And all I can think about is, God, this feels super gay. I hope nobody can see me. You know? And I remember laying in between the hotel, you know, laying in the hotel room, in between the beds, arm numb, sweating, feeling my heart about to go, and still hitting it. And I start writing my mom this note, and it says, this is not a suicide, it's an overdose. Because even when I'm dead, I care about what you think. Here I am giving my life to the power of God, and all I can think about is what you might think of me. Down there looking servile and scraping. The way it's explained to me is you can't get down with the word God, throw an extra O in it. I gave my life to the power of good. Just be nice. Be kind. I fall short, but you know, the perfection, there's no perfection in this thing. The perfection's in the chaos. All that stuff that's going on in my mind, and I'm trying to meditate, and all I hear is like heavy metal chords and metal crickets. It's chun, 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 chun. And I'm trying to meditate, and it's incessant noise and all that stuff that's going on, and all the moving while I'm trying to carry a message. It's just like throwing me off. That's perfection. That's the meditation. The meditation's the chaos. Those moments of peace, that's the work. That's the results of the work, or those little sunspots of the Spirit, which turns into the sunlight of the Spirit. I'm sitting in treatment, and I'm wondering how I'm going to make amends. You know, how am I ever going to make things right with my family? I owe tens of thousands of dollars. How am I going to make this right? I broke her heart so bad. I left. Abortions, lost relationships. How am I ever going to make any of this right? My sponsor said, what step are you on? I said, I think we're in 2 or 3. He was like, yeah. When you get to 9, you're going to be ready for it. You're in 2 or 3. Stay in 2 or 3. By the time you're in 9, you're going to have the power. You're going to have the tools to face these things. And it happened. And I went to my dad, one of the people I did the most harm to. If somebody did to my family what I did to my family, I'd be in prison for the rest of my life. If somebody made my family feel the way I've made my family feel, I would not be a free man. And that's my truth. I went to my dad and I sat around the rooms long enough and I heard everybody's ninth step stories. They're like, I went to my family and they're like, just stay sober. And, you know, and I was like, cool. You know, my dad's going to say that, you know. And I went to my dad and my dad is a CPA and he's like, the apartment we moved you out of, the 3 times you tried to go back to college, 2 DWIs, that'll be $42,000. My dad had a spreadsheet. I've been waiting for you. I'm making $20 payments on $20,000 debts. Is how I started getting esteem. Making $5 payments on $5,000 debts, making $20 payments on $20,000 debts weekly, off the top, I started getting esteem. I started feeling better about myself. And there's a humility involved in cutting a $20 check to somebody whose life you ruined, who somebody you stole from. There's a freedom. On the fourth step, I put down all the people I've hurt, all the things I've done, all the people that hurt me. And there's a couple things I didn't want to look at. A couple words I didn't want to say. And if you were actually a victim, you know, I want to see my part in all the things, but what if I was a victim? What was my part in that? My part is that I held on to it. I want you prosecuted to the full extent of the law, but I want forgiveness for myself. That's not the way forgiveness works. If I want forgiveness, I have to be willing to forgive, and I'm holding on to this stuff because I love the anger. I love the edge of the hate. It's what makes me who I am. It's what gives me a sharp tongue. It's what gives me wit. so I can eviscerate your character in just looking at somebody. That guy sucks at baseball. His dad hated him. You know, I could just look at somebody and just write the most awful story about them. And I think that's one of my skill sets. And it's what's keeping me miserable. So I got to look at all this stuff, this inventory. You know, they say that any business that doesn't take a regular inventory goes broke. And I'm taking a regular inventory and I'm looking at this stuff. And these things don't serve me anymore. This anger doesn't serve me anymore. This jealousy, this hate, this rage doesn't serve me anymore. Yeah, I needed that for a while. I did need that rage for a while. Because I was in survival mode for so long. But I want more than that today. I want happiness. I survived. I made it here. I'm past that. Now it's time to get happy. Now I want freedom. This isn't about not doing dope anymore. It's about having a big, cool life. Somebody told me that. I want a big, cool life. I don't want to just not do dope. Just not doing dope sounds horrible. You know, just not drinking sounds horrible. I don't want that. I want happiness. I want freedom. I want more. Here's the thing. I have an addictive personality. Once I taste freedom, I want more freedom. I want bigger freedom. Once I find happiness, I want more happiness. I want bigger happiness. I want more. Somebody always says this. You only give them credit three times. After that, it's yours. So we'll call this three. My sponsor says, the effects of the steps are repeatable and refinable. Every time I do the work, I get the result. I get the happiness. The happiness is repeatable and it's refinable. And this is what makes it cool, is my happiness gets bigger and exponential happiness. That's the new spiritual goal, exponential happiness, which means bigger and bigger and bigger. And it doesn't stop. Yeah, I get sad and I lose her and I lose it and they come and go and the money ebbs and flows. That's not what makes me happy. Things human are always going to fail me. She'll leave, the business will come and money will come and money will go. That's life. What makes me happy is the relationship that I found in this power, in the silence, in the meditation, and helping. And that feeling that I get when I get to carry a message and see somebody's eyes turn on and see the light turn on in somebody's eyes, and that's the hope. You're sitting in treatment and someone's like, dude, you look different. Has anyone said that to you? You look different. Something happened. And I don't see it in myself. But that light that comes on in our eyes, that's hope and that's God. I did that third step with my sponsor and we got up. And we went outside, and I smoked at the time, and smoking a cigarette, and it's November. I just got out of treatment, and it was a beautiful day. The sun was warming my hair, and I could feel the wind on the back of my neck. And I heard him talking to someone over there, and he said, right here, right now, right this second, everything's okay. And I had this dog. She's passed. She was 16, and she was my heart. Her name was Chica, and I used to see her laying out in the sun, just having a zen moment. You ever seen a dog or cat just zen, just? And said, "Man, I want to be a dog. I wish I could be a cat or whatever, you know." And I'm sitting there, and I'm smoking the cigarette, and I hear him say, right here, right now, right this second, everything's okay. And just for that moment, I was that Zen dog laying out there and sunning in the with the warm fur. And I found God in that moment. Because I can't find him in the future, and I can't find him in the past, but right here in the present, I find it every time I talk about it. Spiritual awakening. right here. But the part about having an awakening means that I go to sleep. I have a default setting of self. That's why I wake up in prayer meditation. Because I default back to self, thinking about me, thinking incessantly about me and me and me and me. Stop. Meditate. The forgiveness that came in the ninth step, where I was talking about, you know, if you're a victim, if you've hurt people. The forgiveness, that's the new drug. The forgiveness is where I find the happiness. You know, and I want to hold on to this stuff because I love guilt and shame, and I love that feeling of being able to hear a sad song and just relate with it and just dig into it, and I'm a victim, and, you know, just I'm different. You know, all that stuff that I held on to for so long, that's my drinking partner. I can hear any blues song and just turn up some whiskey and, yeah, I miss her too, you know, and I don't want to be that guy anymore. I'm sick and tired. I got sick and tired of dope. Now I'm sick and tired of being miserable. I want happiness. I want more. I want more for you guys, man. Because I come out here and I see beauty. You know, you might see broken. I see beauty, man. I love treatment centers. To me, it's like coming to like Valley Forge or like some ancient battleground. This is the coolest stuff we could do, coming to a place like this and seeing us do battle with addiction and trauma and getting better. And I'm pretty sure I'm over time. No? Cool. Sit down for another hour. I'm just getting started. No, I get tired of listening to me. You know, I'm so happy today. Because I haven't smoked crack and drank in 15 years. Yeah. I've got an amazing life. I've got a business that changes lives. I work in an industry that changes lives. I get to co-parent an amazing kid. I've got friends that would ride or die with me. Old school. But none of those are the reason I'm happy. I got happy and those things became part of my life. I didn't get those things and then I'm like, oh, now I'm happy. You know, one of my spiritual teachers died yesterday. Guy named Lama Marut, and you know, he talked about dukkha, you know, the suffering, the grasping, you know, and this is what I learned in the third step is I'm a victim of the delusion that I can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if I only manage well, which means if you just let me out of treatment, if you just let me come back to my job, then I'll be happy. If she would just give me one more chance, then I could be happy. If I just made a little more, then I could be happy. And the thing is, she's given me another chance, and I still drank and did dope. And I wasn't happy. I've made more, and I still drank and did dope, and wasn't happy. And he talks about dukkha, the suffering. And the best part of the suffering is that I caused the suffering. I choose to suffer. Today, I choose not to suffer. I choose anger. Things don't make me angry. I choose to react with anger. Why? Because I'm scared. Spiritual awakening. I fall asleep to this stuff. I have to reset every day. Anyway, I could go on. I love recovery. I talk about recovery all day long. I love this stuff. I love talking about spirit. I love talking about this new concept of God. Love talking about puppies with fat bellies and milk breath. I love this stuff. I could sit up here all night and tell you about infinite love and exponential happiness. And But unless we're willing to do some things different. I want to do something different today. I want to get uncomfortable. I want to get uncomfortable, and that's how change happens. Get uncomfortable. Sit next to somebody weird. Go say hey to the weird guy in the corner. What's up, Chris? You know, just get out of your comfort zone and change happens. Anyway, thanks guys.